5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hey everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engage Learning at WorkInSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports podcast. There's a moment that sticks out to me from today's interview with Dan Kaufman, New York Jets Director of Corporate Partnerships. Well, there are actually a couple. Dan is a really great guest and shares a ton of insider advice, but one in particular was when Dan talks about his early career and how he failed a lot. You'll hear him discuss it firsthand in just a bit, but I think it's really valuable to highlight it leading into this conversation that's upcoming. Dan comes right out and says, I tried a lot, I failed a lot, and I learned a lot. This is an attitude that most people don't have. Dan says it very normally, like this is just a pattern everyone goes through. But in reality, most of us are afraid to try because we're afraid to fail, and that holds us back. When I say most of us, I definitely mean me. When I was starting my career, I was so afraid to be judged by my peers as being inferior that I didn't ask questions, I didn't take any risks, I didn't try anything in the gray areas. And in turn, I didn't really push myself into uncomfortable areas. I thought if I did my tasks and hustled around, that would be enough. And you know what? It was just fine. But looking back, my own fears of judgment stunted my growth. I see it now with my kids firsthand. They learn best by trying and failing. And you know what? I let them. My daughter was trying to make a pizza the other day, part of this whole quarantine world that we're in, right? And she said, hey, Dad, can I try to make something else with the extra dough? Yeah, go for it. She made this calzone type thing. Stuffed it with too much sauce, too much cheese, and it burst open in the oven. And she came to me afterwards and said, oh, if I was going to do that again, I think I'd make these three changes to my approach. She's 12. I was 22 years old at CNN Sports Illustrated trying to play it safe all the time, or being faced with something I didn't know how to do and faking it. Instead of just asking someone else a question on how, or instead of just trying things, or instead of experimenting and learning through the process of failing. This is ego, and I'm not the only one that suffers from this affliction. Failing is okay. In fact, it's better than okay. It's the best way to learn. Now, just to be clear, I mean failing by trying things that maybe don't work out, not failing because you are lazy and miss deadlines or do sloppy work. Failing still has a standard to it. Dan Kaufman joined the New York Jets a little over 5 years ago, and as you'll hear in this interview, he really loves his job in corporate sponsorships and is excited by his day-to-day involvement. Now, before we jump in, this interview was conducted a few weeks ago, prior to the coronavirus outbreak, so there's no reference to our ongoing struggle, the NFL season, how the Jets are operating as a business, any of that. Just a good old-fashioned pre-corona perspective on getting going in the sports industry. Here he is, my good friend Dan Kaufman, Director of Corporate Partnerships with the New York Jets. Hey, Dan, what's happening today, buddy?
Living the dream, man. Living the dream. How are you?
I'm doing really well. So before we get into your world of corporate partnerships, the NFL, and all the steps you took to get where you are now, I want to go back to your beginning a bit. Did you always have this dream of working in sports? How did this kind of evolve for you?
So ironically, no. I played somewhat college football. I got hit by a drunk driver in college.
And oh,
so,
no.
Yeah, it was crazy. I blew out my knee. It was a very, very, traumatizing accident. So I was actually interning with a bunch of judges, lawyers. I thought I was going to be a lawyer. And I literally thought I was going to do that. I wanted to make sure I wanted to go to law school. So my first actual job was after I went to Hamilton, in upstate New York, I went to be a legal assistant for a law firm, a corporate law firm in Los Angeles called Heller Ehrman. It's no longer there, but I found out that I do not want to be a lawyer. people weren't having fun. Yeah, it was my end. So I kind of went back to my passion of trying to get into sports. And I, this is in 2005, you know, when this happened. And I kind of started just from the ground up of how you get into sports. So that was kind of my first area of what I got into sports with.
So when you say that, when you start from the ground up, what did that mean to you? How did you kind of look at it and say, all right, I don't have a ton of experience. I haven't done internships in sports, but that's where I want to be. Well, what was your approach then to getting in?
So, yeah, it's smart. You know, I looked at everything. I tried asking around. Again, the industry is totally different than it is today. Now,
right,
there are majors in sports management. There are graduate degrees. There are doctoral degrees. I actually, ironically, my first job was through getting the job through workinsports.com, ironically.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was funny because, you know, they're based in my hometown, Scottsdale, Arizona. And, you know, I actually, you know, called a lot of people and were like, look, if you want to get into any career in sports, you have to start out ticket sales. And I'm like, okay, what does that mean? And so I literally applied for my resume, sent my resume to people, and actually the job I got was through the Pensacola Ice Pilots through workinsports.com. So
that's awesome.
Is that a plug for you guys?
I love that. Yeah, keep going.
Hometown company.
Tell me how great we are. It's awesome. So, okay, let's talk about that Pensacola Ice Pilots, because that's got to be a pretty major move. You're going from, you know, the law world to then ticket sales. You're at a minor league hockey team trying to sell tickets for hockey in the South. I mean, that's a pretty difficult indoctrination into this world. But in your first year doing it, you led the organization in revenue. So that's pretty impressive to turn that corner and to start knocking it out of the park right away. What did you learn about sales and marketing early on and kind of what it meant to be successful in that role?
Great question. I would say, I think I have a temperament of learning to fail fast, and I just kept failing. I know it sounds crazy, but I just kept failing. And, you know, and how I learned was through my mistakes. And, you know, maybe a call might not work here, but a call might work somewhere else. I might change how I talk. And I got to tell you, you know, the biggest thing I think from my end of being raised in Arizona, you know, going to school in upstate New York, first job in Los Angeles, then going to the deep South, it was a real culture shock.
Yeah.
Because people move slow, you know, down there. And again, people were like, you know, when people are looking for a first job, you got to go anywhere, wherever the job is. My place is Pensacola. And I would just say, though, how I learned everything was just failing fast. And from that end, I just kept working and going and just calling and meeting people, getting involved in the chamber. I was learning my way from that first job of doing that. So it was a cool experience. I was only there for, you know, a couple of days, season and a half, and then the opportunity came to go to Tampa. But it was a cool experience. I mean, I failed a lot. I failed a lot with people, with culture, and I'm glad I did it in a small town, you know, and it was a good experience. So.
Did you feel like with that first role where you were selling season tickets and you're selling group sales, you're doing all of that kind of work, the revenue focused roles, did you kind of feel like, okay, this is my fit? Because it sounds like you were still trying to discover a little bit as well. Did it feel like you were in the right zone?
Well, yeah, it was. I mean, you got to think about it, in the minors, it's totally different than in the majors, because in the minors, you know, you're doing game operations, you're doing marketing, you're doing radio. I was doing team travel. I was doing, my last part of it, I was doing some corporate sales and sponsorships. So I learned that. And to be candid, of all these different roles, I learned so much within the minor league system. I tell a lot of up and comers in the sports industry, the minor leagues where, you know, might do it for a couple of years, but you touch everything.
Yeah.
I really thought my favorite, in my opinion, was corporate sponsorship, which is my role, because I think I had the most fun of that, but I didn't know it though. And I touched a lot of different places I was in Pensacola.
That's really cool. Yeah, we suggest that a lot too. It's like the minor league baseball, minor league hockey, they have the same expectations. Like there's an expectation they're going to put on a great event every night, and yet a much smaller staff. So you're going to have to do a lot more. And getting that wide breadth of experience can be a really powerful foundation moment for your career.
Yeah, you wear a lot of hats. And you know what? Sometimes if they do a teddy bear toss when they do a first goal score, you have to run out, get a bunch of teddy bears and go work with the ice crew and whatever has to happen. I had to wear the mascot for one night. That was my hazing. So it was cool. I mean, I've done it all when I was there. It was a it was a good experience.
Yeah, that's cool. So you've also, I mean, minor league hockey with the Pensacola Ice Pilots. You then were mid-major college at University of Toledo, major college at University of Wisconsin, and now in the NFL with the Jets. Other than, and you had to stop in there with the Tampa Bay Bucks too. I don't want to miss that. Other than the obvious, you know, much bigger budgets and larger staffs, what do you kind of identify as the main differences in the varying work environments? Of course, they're all connected to sports, but I mean, there's a big difference in all those steps, I'd imagine.
Yeah, no, I truly, you know, you kind of hit the nail on the head with this. Like, it's all like football's football, you know, hockey's hockey, baseball's baseball, but it's just different. It really is. Like, the collegiate world is a different fan base. You're selling, you're marketing to a loyalist fan base from that end, where in the NFL, you know, what I've been doing, it's just bigger and more abundant budgets. We can do more. They got clients to take care of clients for renewals, for upsells, for new business. So I think, in my opinion, it's a lot different, but I learned a few things from each different step of my job to make me where I'm at right now. So, you know, from Tampa Bay, I learned really how to grow when I started in, you know, inside sales to selling ticket sales, selling group sales, selling suites, to then taking a step back, take three steps forward to go into Learfield at Toledo. Again, very similar path of where I was in Pensacola, where I was in a very small market. I made a lot of mistakes. I failed fast. It's the same thing. And it kind of really fine-tuned those skills. And then when I got promoted to Wisconsin, that was a lot bigger. You know, Big Ten school, top five, probably top 10 athletic budgets. You know, behind the Packers is one of the biggest brands within Wisconsin. And then this opportunity happened with the Jets of, you know, having one of the biggest teams in NFL and the biggest markets with the biggest sport, all me selling sponsorship and learning to deal with those caliber of people, of C-suite people, of Fortune 1000 companies to local mom and pops of our official pool builders. So it's been cool. It's just every conversation I have is different. Every day I have is different. And I try to pick up a little bit every day as I go is how I can keep improving myself.
See, that's really interesting because you talked about how the audiences are different every step you've had. And that makes total sense. Like, you have a different kind of market and a different kind of audience and persona and the type of people that are going to gravitate towards your product. How hard was it for you to adjust at each step? And how much do you rely on, you know, data and research to really understand who your targets may be?
And listen, great question. I would say, from that end, you know, it's funny, the data, you know, years ago until I would say with my first year in Tampa, so it was my sixth year in New York,
yeah.
It's the data game's just been totally different, you know, data analytics but you know, years ago, we didn't really use data. You know, I gotta be honest with you. It's like, yeah, we didn't really use data. It was just more of just like, how do you keep your call logs? How do you make sure who you're talking with, how many, you know, what you're doing from that end? So it's been different now, you know, especially with the Jets the past couple of years now, data science, analytics, that department's, you know, gone, I think, from 1 to 6 or 7 people now. Again, don't quote me on that, but yeah, that's a growing industry. And I think, especially with younger people, they don't want to get into sales and marketing, which is about 70% of the jobs. Then that's another avenue where learning how to code, learning how to use Python, learning how to use R, all these different programs and how it's applied for us, either saving money or making money for our organization.
Right. Yeah. I said this once before. I interviewed Maylin Vu, who is the director of talent acquisition for the Cleveland Indians. And she said the number one role they're trying to fill is business analytic roles. So just trying to figure out, unlock that code to figure out, you know, how to make us more money, you know, and that's really, so much of it is in data now. So it is interesting that you're finding that as well. It's interesting. You and I were talking a little bit before this interview, and we were both talking about how we talk to college-age students a lot, and I do the same. I talk to college-age students a lot throughout the year, and whenever I mention to them that the sports sales jobs are plentiful, they all kind of roll their eyes at me. But if I say sports marketing, they all kind of perk up, like, oh, marketing, okay. But isn't the truth that the line between the two is pretty blurry? I mean, sales and marketing kind of go hand in hand, don't they?
I would say so, but I think the biggest thing is, you know, and I say this to everyone who, like, again, I get reached out, you know, every week by a prospective person that wants to get into sports or through my family member or friends, neighbors, et cetera, about how, you know, how did you get your job in? And you know, the biggest thing I kind of tell a lot of, you know, people who want to get into sports is, you know, you're going to have to get into sales. You know, I get a lot of people are like, you know, want to do social media. They want to do marketing. They want to do other aspects. And I'm like, that's fine. I think everyone who's worked in sports for the most part is starting in ticket sales. And part of that is just creating and having interpersonal communication skills. I think the biggest thing is what people try to get into sports is, you know, learn to talk with people. Like I say, it sounds so simple, but learn to read people, learn to, you know, ask questions, have that natural curiosity. I think that's really important. And just not only just working in jobs, but just figuring out, you know, different careers about different people with their different backgrounds. And so, you know, I'm a natural person. Even though this interview, you're asking me the questions, I am talking a lot in this interview. Usually when I'm talking with others, I'm asking questions. And I want to learn more. And it's just, that's the way I think the world works is, you know, people love to talk about themselves. But I think the biggest thing I'll tell you, especially with anyone coming in to sports, it's going to have to be, you're going to have to go into either ticket sales or analytics. That's just my opinion from my end. I think as you build your internal network, you know, as you get certifications, as you get the people know who you are, then yeah, if you want to go into marketing or social media or whatever, you know, that's an idea that's a career path that someone could choose.
Yeah. There's so much power when you have a proven track record of revenue generation. Like if you have that on your record, if you have that on your resume somewhere, that just speaks volumes to the way that you can make a difference in an organization. Like it's non-debatable. Like it's data points. It's like, you can't argue that. So anybody gains strength, I believe if they get in sales, they find some success there, they start to put some, you know, some, like you said, building that interpersonal connections, being a better listener, all of those things. It's a really powerful tool to have in your foundation. So, okay, we both acknowledge that people tend to hear that and they're like, oh, yeah, sure, but I don't really want to work in sales. What do you think? From your experience, you've been doing this a long time. What do you think is the most under or misunderstood part of working in sales? Because it sounds like you're having a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like my job because it's different every day. Like, I honestly don't think I can do the same thing every day. I just don't think that's just not in my mantra. It's just not who I am from that end. So, you know, the first years working in sports and inside sales, you know, you're going to be on the grind. You're going to be making your 100 to 150 phone calls a day. And, you know, team's doing well, that's great. Team's not doing well, that's not good. But you got to overcome those objections and move forward and have adversity from that end. So, you know, to answer your question, in my opinion, you know, it's just, I like it. It just, it's funny. You're around people. It's different. It's not doing the same thing every day. So I kind of answered my question in the beginning, but that's what I like to do. I love it, especially in sponsorship. You know, I learned so much about companies and industries and stuff I would never know about if I was just doing a day-to-day job. You know, I learned a lot about, I did a blowtorch deal this year. I knew nothing about blowtorches. And yeah, like, so it's just been those things of like, that's what I like. And that's just, again, that natural curiosity of learning about companies, industries, and all that.
So you have an official blowtorch of the New York Jets. I love that.
It's not an official blowtorch. They were just a partner. It was just one of those things that, you know, how did that happen? You know, we found out one of our former alums, Nick Mangold, was working with a company based in Columbus, and they came to us about an idea about tailgating and using blowtorches, and we created a partnership.
I love it. Yeah, and it sounds like there's so much creativity involved too. It's like you're finding the connections between a business and your Jets, you know, like you're trying to figure out, okay, what's that magic formula that I can present them with, right? I mean, isn't that kind of how it works?
Yeah, I mean, it's a needs analysis. You know, you have to figure out, like, what are they trying to accomplish? Like, you know, every company's trying to, you know, make more money, obviously, through marketing and advertising and hospitality and things of that nature. But, you know, how can we customize it and how can we create something unique that's a little different to engage their potential customers or current customers? And it's funny, like, people come to me, we're talking in the process, and they come to me, they're like, you know, hey, send me a proposal. I'm like, I can't really answer that question yet because I don't necessarily know what you're trying to accomplish.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, that kind of shakes them up. I'm like, look, I'm just being candid. it's just one of those things that, like, until I understand what you're trying to accomplish, then we can kind of put a platform together that would make sense to your needs and wants.
Yeah, you have to be able to be a good listener and understand what they need, or else you're just shooting in the dark, I would imagine. So I'm really, I'm really curious about this. You've obviously seen education as a major component of your success. After Pensacola, you landed a role with the Tampa Bay Bucks. At the same time, you went back and got your master's. Now you're with the Jets and you're getting your doctorate. Why was this a part of your plan? Why was advanced education something you saw as being really important to you? And oh my God, are you crazy for getting your doctorate? That seems insane to me.
Yeah. I got a lot of people saying that all the time. They're like, wow, I have to call you Dr. Kaufman. No, you know, I got to tell you, my whole family was a bunch of educators. They worked in education. I don't know. I look at education as a way to learn new skills and apply to the real world. Like when I went to Hamilton, it was a liberal arts college. I knew nothing about business. I really did. I didn't take any business courses. I learned how to read, write, and talk. So I went to the University of Tampa while I was with the Bucks. I got my MBA, and then I decided to work more in and got my MS in marketing. You know, I think with this role here, it was just something that I wanted to do. I think me learning more about data collection, more on analytics, more on just where the world's going. I am getting my doctorate now in business administration at the University of South Florida. And yeah, is it hard? I would say so, but it's a challenge I like. It's something that I'm very passionate about, and it's, you know, balancing life now. Now I'm married, so I got to make sure my wife's happy. I got to make sure my dogs are happy. I don't have children yet. But, you know, it's just one of those things to where it's, you know, it's something that I want to do right now. And I think I got another couple of years left, and then I'll get my letters and see what my next goal is in life.
Every single highly successful person I've ever interviewed, when you ask them to boil it down, like, what do they think is the pattern for success? They'll all say being a lifelong learner. They always say that, like, just wanting to be curious and learn. So good. I mean, good for you for going after that, because I wouldn't have the patience. So let's talk about your role with the Jets. You're the director of corporate partnerships. Explain the main thrust of your role. And I know you kind of told us a little bit about this, but what you like best about it. I know you obviously like connecting with people, but get into the nuts and bolts a little bit. Tell us a little bit about what it means to be the director of corporate partnerships.
Yeah. So there are six of us that are directors. Many of us have had at least a dozen or more years experience working in sports, that's either in ticket sales or, you know, consumer sales and or sponsorship. You know, it's one of those things to where, you know, as a mature property, the Jets, you know, we have to figure out new ways of revenue by sponsorship, advertising, marketing, things of that nature. And so from my world, looking at that is I have to find new companies, new, other sectors. So, you know, I work a lot with state government, federal government. I work a lot with education. I work a lot with unions. I've worked with just different new businesses that I've done deals with from their end, just because the property's been so mature and we have to find new ways. So it's having those conversations, explain what we do, and kind of go from there.
That's cool. So obviously you've made this very clear, but relationships matter a lot in sales and marketing and getting in front of people and being charismatic and listening and all of those things. But it's also, you know, it's not just with prospective clients, it's also within your own organization. I read a recommendation of you from Clay Hampton, director of operations with the Texans, who said about you, from the very first time I met him, he immediately made an impression on me as someone who would be a great teammate. Now, that's a really nice recommendation. But in your perspective, how important is it to be likable and collaborative and have a good attitude in the workplace?
I think I need to take a step back, though. I think it's not just, I think it's just being authentic and being yourself. You know, I think that's who I am. You know, it's very, once people get to know me, it's like, I am who I am. I treat the intern, you know, the part-time employee and the CEO the same. And so I think that's been one of my successes, me just being raised and going from that end. But it's just been, it's not just relationship with sales, it's just relationships with everybody, you know, as we get to know each other, you know, as someone who's calling in or asking through LinkedIn about how to work in sports, you know, You know, I'm like, just keep in touch. You know, you never know where you'll be in 5-10 years. You know, the sports industry and life, it's, you know, you always hear it's a small world. You know what I mean? Like, people where are at, maybe not right now, but they're somewhere else. And that relationship you've had over time, you know, it could take you 15 years to build your reputation, but one mistake to ruin it. You know, I think that's just where you have to be yourself, be authentic, have a good true north on your compass, and be who you are. And I think that's been, you know, I think that's just been my mantra. Like, yeah, I kind of say that. And that's how I've been successful, I think, just in life. And you kind of said it already, but have a natural curiosity, ask questions, and treat everyone the same.
I just love that word too, being authentic. Like, I just love what that stands for. Like, just being true to yourself and not put on a show, not trying to be something you're not. Just be authentic to who you are and show the best that you have. I just think that's important for everybody. I also noticed on your LinkedIn profile, you wrote, and I like this very much, over time, you've learned that listening, being detailed, and unique have benefited me to being successful in my career. Let's focus on that last one, being unique. That stood out to me. Why is that important, and how do you kind of embody that trait?
So, you know, that's a great, again, you're asking a lot of good questions.
Thank you.
This is good. No, that's good.
I like that.
Good. No, it's good. And it's making me think before I answered. So just tough. With unique, and I say this to a lot of people, and you have to kind of be, you know, when you're applying to jobs, when you are in business, when you are around people, I kind of say you got to kind of be like the face in the crowd. And naturally, I have a look where I kind of stand out already. You know, I'm 6'2", 275 pounds, bald, beard. I stick out. Like, I can never commit a crime because I would get pointed out by 10 people. That's just who I am. You know, from unique though, it's like, you know, I read this book one time, when everyone's zigging, you should be zagging. You know, like, especially when you're applying for a job, like, find out more about the company. Find out more about the person, you know, who you're going to interview with. You know, what do they like? What do they not like? What are, you know, from that end, you can have a true conversation because it shows that you've done your research. I think a lot of people, even just not only interviews, but like in sales calls or anything, they're very, you know, over time, people are like, wow, you've done your research about my company. I'm like, well, no, I care because I want to learn more and see how I can learn how you do your business so it can help you guys can learn to what we do and try to make something happen. I think that's been a lot of things. I think it's been my strength has just been personally is just been different by just caring and going, taking that extra step, you know, before our call today, I saw you were on my LinkedIn profile. I went on your LinkedIn profile. I want to see your background, you know, from where you're at. So, it's just different things I would say is, you know, if everyone's going one way, try something different. You know, I think the one thing is that I tell people when they're applying for jobs is, you know, I get people calling, emailing, texting me from, you know, friends, relatives, other people, jobs, you know, about getting internships or full-time jobs. And so it's just been one of those things that, like, you know, how, you know, what makes you different from your resume, you know, from that end. I would tell you for anyone who's applying a job or anything, especially is, you know, people, well, this is my opinion. People want to look at two types of people when they hire someone. The first one is they want to see how much money you can make for the company or how much money you can save for the company. So no matter what I see a lot of resumes and even people, not just, you know, 18 to 24, I mean, people older than me, you know, make it quantifiable. I think that's one of the biggest things that people don't do is, you know, everyone looks at something where, you know, everyone puts a lot of qualitative information in them about themselves, but, you know, what have you done differently? So being unique, here's a perfect example I saw years ago was there was a woman who was applying for a job. It was a ticket sale job years ago. And she was a Starbucks employee. She was a barista.
Okay.
And she, I mean, this was just, again, being different. She put in her resume, you know, most transactions done in an hour. And I'm like, that got my attention.
Yeah.
I'm like, how did you, I mean, what did you come up with? She's like, well, we had a competition of who can do the most transactions in an hour without making a mistake. And I thought that was really cool. And then, you know, she put in most money brought in one shift. So she made her a job that was a barista at Starbucks into a quantifiable job that she brought in revenue. And I thought that was really unique. So that's kind of just one way to think about of being unique. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And I love that. And I'm always telling people, like, drift away from all the power verbs or the power adjectives and give me some data points in your resume. Tell me that you grew Twitter followers 22% or you increased revenue year over year or you decreased spending year over year. Give me some data. And so I love that you're hitting that point home because I think that's super important. And in fact, I'll brag on you for a little bit here. In 2016, you were the top revenue producer for the New York Jets organization, which is like, that's pretty crazy if you think about it. If you really boil it down, here's an NFL team and you were the top revenue producer for the team. I'm imagining it got you at least a parking spot up front or maybe a key to the executive bathroom. You know, maybe you get a little bit of something kickback for that. But in all seriousness, that's a pretty major accomplishment. Do you ever, in this world where you're always hunting that next big fish, do you ever get to celebrate and enjoy those moments or is it always on to the next thing? Is it always like I got to focus and go forward?
No, again, another good question. Appreciate you asking. You know, I would tell you within the, you know, we have our VP and our SVP, and we have, you know, our departmental meetings. And a part of this, which I've never really been a part of an organization like this, is, you know, everyone comes and they celebrate the big wins of what we've done. So, you know, if we got a new partner, XYZ, you know, everyone cheers and it kind of goes from there. So it's been cool. It's been fun. You know, it's always like, I say it's not a bad way. It's good, but you can't rest on your laurels. I think that's just life though.
Right.
Where you can't, and you gotta keep moving. You gotta keep learning. You gotta keep doing. Cause if you get complacent, that's when failure, I think, really starts to happen. That's just my opinion is like, you know, yesterday we had off. I'm working all day. I'm working literally morning. I work on school stuff, and afternoon I worked on work stuff. And the wife went to me. She goes, "You know, do you ever stop?" And I'm like, "You can't." You know, I just said, "Just like I keep going." You know, I said, "Just that's just how I am." And you know, don't get me wrong, vacation's good, but sometimes you got to work hard, and sometimes you got to you know take breaks. But you know, it's what it is.
That sounds like a pretty cool culture, though, that there is a recognition for accomplishments within the Jets organization. How have the cultures kind of varied from your different positions? Does it matter much in the size of the organization? Does it come top down where, like, the CEO kind of establishes what the company culture is going to be like? Like, who plays a role in establishing the corporate culture from your view? Because you've been at multiple different organizations. You've probably seen it from a lot of different angles. Where does that kind of come into play as just kind of establishing the culture?
I think you know what it is. I think it's more time. I think as time has gone on, organizations are getting bigger. The industry's absolutely changed over the last 15 years. You know, it really has. I mean, it's been unbelievable where, you know, no one even had an inside sales department. You know, like there wasn't that. You know, it wasn't where, you know, they had, you know, people outside of college come in and get jobs directly. I think that's absolutely have changed a lot. From that end. But, you know, I think though leadership comes from down top. That's just my mentality. I think, you know, many people stay at their job, their leader jobs. A lot of it has to do with their management.
Yeah.
I think though that's the world we're going into now is, you know, I think it wasn't where before me and you, someone would stay at the company 25, 40 years. Like it just, I think people are, if they don't like their job, they can move because there's so much choice.
Right. Yeah, it's true. It's true. And culture is playing a much bigger role now. It does just seem like it's something that's being talked about a lot more and trying to retain your talent more because you're right. The options are out there. I mean, we know that firsthand. We have 25,000 jobs on our job board right now just in the sports industry. The options are out there. So it's really on the companies to establish a culture that makes people want to stay because, you know, you've been in hiring. You've had staff. Like, it's hard to bring in new talent and to replace somebody and to go through that all over again. It's much easier to keep your stars.
Yeah, and again, the thing is, though, and grow with them. So, like, you know, a good area is, like, you know, what are your objectives that you want to do? And that's something that you as an applicant, you know, you as an applicant, you as an employee want to look at. You know, it's just something to where, you know, where do you want to be in, you know, the next 3 years to 5 years? Like, what do you want to accomplish? And that's something that as time goes on, you know, that's the company that should be supporting your goals and you need from that end.
Right, totally. So we're going to finish up with this. And Dan, this has been awesome. You're just giving us so much great information. But I know you got a busy day ahead of you, and I know you have things you got to get to. So let's finish up with this. I know from our job board, at least 50% of the jobs in the sports industry are connected to sales, possibly more. That number varies a good amount, but it's always right around 50 to 60. And we both know if you can show a history of generating revenue, you'll never struggle to find work. So how do we convince the young people in our audience that sales roles are worth pursuing and are high ceiling and have all these great potentials in them? How do we do that?
That's a great question. I think, in my opinion, you know, I think there's a perception of sales of like, it's not a glorified job. I absolutely love my job. I think it just has to be taught in the schools. And I think people have to understand that, you know, if you want to get into sports, this is what you're going to have to do. This is what everyone's done. This is what people need to do from that end. And, you know, if you had told me, you know, 15 years ago, hey, you're going to be selling for the Jets, I would be like, no, I don't want to. I didn't know that. Like, I would not know that. So I would just kind of say, in my opinion, it's a great opportunity. It's a great way to get into sports. It's a great career. It's a fun career. You're going to change. Every day is going to be different for you. You're going to be challenging yourself because you're self-motivated. And it's a great career. I honestly don't know what else I would be doing besides this.
Yeah, and you're working for the New York Jets. I mean, that's pretty damn cool, right?
I would definitely say that as well, yes. But, I mean, it's you know, when I started off this call, I said, hey, well, yo, how are you? I'm like, I'm living the dream. Like, I always want to work for an NFL team. I've got an opportunity to work for two NFL teams.
Yeah.
And I consider myself very lucky. But you can't rest on your laurels. You know, you got to keep moving. Again, it's the same thing I kind of said a few minutes ago where I love what I do. They got to have continuous growth, and you got to keep learning, and you got to keep moving forward.
Dan, this has been great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been an incredible amount of knowledge. And I'm even going to say this. As a Boston guy, born and raised, a Patriots fan, I'm gonna give you a go Jets. I'm gonna cheer you on a little bit here.
Dude, one fan at a time. That's how you got to do it. That's how you got to do it, man. I appreciate your time. I really do. And if there's anything I can help you guys, anyone who's listening to the podcast, go to my LinkedIn page. You can look up Dan Kaufman. It's K-A-U-F-M-A-N-N. I'm always here to help. You guys have any questions, look forward to talking with you and reaching out and mention anything on this podcast. It would be great because I just want to see, you know, how people follow up and just love to track that. So I appreciate you guys' time. Appreciate your time and look forward to continuing those conversations.
Thanks to everyone for listening, and thanks to Dan for jumping on the show. There's so much I loved about the interview, but in particular, I loved how curious he is to keep learning and growing. That is how you make it in this world. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review wherever you listen, and share with others so we can keep growing and introducing our content to a new and growing audience. Be smart, everyone. Stay inside and be safe.